The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
The line who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH, I'm Andy, your host, and today I'm delighted to be joined by my dear friends, true campaigners for free speech, Monica Schaefer and Alfred Schaefer. So let's bring them up right now. Alfred, are you with us?
Yeah, thanks Andy, I'm here and looking forward to our call, thank you.
Excellent. And Monica, are you with us?
I certainly am, and yes, likewise, I look forward to this. We are living in exciting times with everything going on around us and both in our personal lives as well. And it's all connected. So this should be fun times. Okay. Over to you.
Thank you, Monica. And folks, it's going to be a sort of a show of two halves in some ways, but there is definitely clear overlap between the two. The show's entitled Alfred's New Inquisition and Monica's new book. And we're going to start off with what Alfred's been up to in recent weeks that we're labelling the new Inquisition. Alfred, what would you like to tell us about this?
Well, yeah, yesterday I had to make an appearance before the Inquisition. It's just a lower court. It's not the higher level court like the case that Monica and I were on together on. And so this is just a first round, one could say. And I'm really surprised about this because the charge against me was about something that happened in the prison. And this is it's a long, complicated story, so I'm going to try to make it short, even though it's a very simple nonsense, the story itself. I spent 558 days in isolation mode, like I was thrown into the bunker, which is a kind of a hole with nothing at all, no pen, no paper, no nothing, like a video camera in the corner of the cell. And I was tossed in there because of my having to breathe during this corona time, and they were starting to clamp down on the things you had to do, you know, put this mask on and your nose had to be tucked in. Well, my nose was never tucked in under the under my mask, because I mean the mask is just a symbol of subservience. It has had no other function other than to show that you're a groveling little slug. So I never used the mask the way it was supposed. I was supposed to, and of course they were, as the persons in wearing a uniform, the people of authority, who were still being able to feed in the food trough kind of thing, they were instructed to crack down on disobedient dogs. So they looked at me as being a disobedient dog. And that led to a dispute I had, which led me straight into this bunker. And after I had been in the bunker about 5 days or so, I was in the bunker for about a week when this thing occurred, then I was in the fresh air in the courtyard for fresh air, which we got. The only time I came out of that hole was for 60 minutes a day, when that's the 60 minutes of fresh air that we are entitled to. So it's in a sort of a courtyard there. And being in this isolation mode, sometimes I was alone, but sometimes I was with one or two other people who were also in isolation mode. And in this particular day, I was with a young Afghani and a young Albanian, and I got along just fine with them. And we were walking around in a circle kind of thing. And I told them why I was in this isolation mode. And I told them, well, pardon me, an old man like me has got to breathe, you know, and I didn't have my nose tucked under that mask properly. And a long story short, that ended, you know, I had a conflict with the people in authority because of that. And they threw me into the slammer because I was uncooperative. And then I told them the reason why I was in prison, and it was because of my jumping dog. And this dog, he didn't even so much as crap on the sidewalk. He's actually quite a nice dog, but he can jump 1.80 meters high. So I showed them the height, you know, and then, which is, I guess they confused that with the old Roman salute, which they have rebranded into the Hitler salute. And they have made this, they've defined that as being absolutely terribly illegal. And it's a symbol of a terrorist organization. Imagine that, these people who are now injecting the whole world with these rat poison COVID bioweapon are calling a Roman salute, which was there long before Adolf Hitler or these people were there. They call that an act of, you know, terrorism kind of thing. So they had so they had me, the guard saw that, and he yelled at me, "Hey, that's a Hitler salute, stop it." And the Albanian guy was very sharp, and he says right away, no, he's just telling us, showing us how high his dog can jump. And I says, yeah, you know, I says, my dog, he's a jumping dog, and this, he likes to jump this high. And so he went and snitched on me, the guard, and that led to charges being laid. And this is, I have to tell you this part of the story. They actually had wanted me to appear in court for this while I was still in prison and had it all arranged for me. And then somebody had, they knew how I would, that was during the Corona time. So they actually had set up a sort of a trap, you could say, to have me sort of sabotage that appearance, because they came to my cell, three people from security who have sort of, they're different than the regular wardens kind of thing, about 45 minutes earlier than normal. So it was really dark outside still. And it says, "Schaefer, you come to your courtyard, your fresh air courtyard right now." And I says, "Well, just a minute, I'm not even ready." And then I scrambled to get ready and walk with them. And then I already heard them when one of them was in front of me. A couple of them were behind me on walking down the aisle toward the stairwell to go down to the courtyard kind of thing. And I could already hear the voice, you know, behind me, "Your mask, put your mask on properly." And so I just put it over my nose, turn around, you know, look at him, turn back, face forward, and I use my chin to knock the mask down a bit, get my nose out of that mask. And then I heard his voice again, "Schaefer, I said your mask," you know, and he was really starting to growl fiercely. And then I the more he growled, the more defiant I got. Then he says, "We're going to end your courtyard right here and now." And so that was it. They terminated. I did not get to go outside. And they threw me back in my cell. And then I said, and then I was pushing the button there, you know, for the headquarters of the prison there kind of thing. You know, every cell has this button, you know, like emergency button you can push. And I says, "Hey, I'm entitled to 60 minutes of fresh air, and you cannot keep me from that." And they says, "Well, if you would just obey the rules, blah, 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 blah." And then I realized this is hopeless. I'm going to lose my 60 minutes of fresh air for this day. But the next day, I early in the morning, I says, "I am insisting on my fresh air. I want my fresh air." And so they did take me out there. And this time, okay, they had the regular warden take me to the courtyard. And I just to make sure, I says, "I'm not going to overdo it here." And I cooperated as, you know, so I got out to the courtyard. And then an interesting thing happened. The warden who was in the tower there, he was on the phone with somebody. And he says, "Schaefer, get over here." So I go come close to him. And he says, I have the judge in Augsburg. And it's about your court appearance. They are asking if you will wear your mask and we'll let you take it off when you have to speak, in your court case, will you agree to that?" And I says, "No, for this court appearance, I will wear no mask, not one step of the way from my prison cell to your Muppet show. And I'm not going to, neither going to put the mask on, nor will I stick my finger up my ass for that. Okay. I'm not going to do a dance for you like that." And then the guy says, "I'm not going to tell him." And it says, "Tell the judge that." And the guy says, "I'm not going to talk about, you know, the last part, what you said, but we'll talk about your mask." And then, And then the judge says, no, we can't do that because the mask mandate says, you know, they're not going to allow for any kind of deviation from their strict rules. So they let, so they canceled that appearance because they knew they could not get me into the courtyard unless they really like beat me down with maybe a rubber club or something and tied that mask over my face. So they canceled it and put it on hold basically. And then now so much later, they brought that up again. This court case, and that was yesterday. I went there yesterday, and it was so pathetic, so incredibly insanely criminal how these judges and state prosecutors are behaving. They will not listen to anything. The witnesses that they wanted, which was the Afghan or the Albanian, neither of them came because they all had, the Afghan was still in prison and he said he has a sore shoulder. Of course, he used that as an excuse not to come. And there's no reasoning or discussing anything. They just says, you did a Hitler salute and so forth. And there's no escaping that. And I get 6 months and that's it, you know. And so we're going to obviously appeal that to take it into the next level, you know, next level. But the things that are happening now, at the rate that they are happening, I am almost expecting that before this even gets up to the next level, they're going to understand that the world is waking up at a tremendous rate right now. And this this trying to condition us like dogs, like the most primitive, unthinking dogs, to do their bidding while they blatantly offend every single code of every human decency that you know, there's nothing human about these people anymore. And I just think that this is our time has come now. Like more and more people are just saying, this is now the time to break all their thought laws, because it's only going to get worse and worse and worse until they realize they just cannot move ahead anymore. So that was my adventure yesterday, and here we are talking today. I'm not yet in prison. They want me there, but even if they lock me up, so what? You know, it's not going to be long, and this whole matrix of this suffocating death matrix is coming down. All the lies are coming down now, and that's it, you know. So I'll just pass the microphone off for a minute and catch my breath here. But that's what my latest adventure is. And I almost say that, like, some people will say, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that you're facing them again. And I say, no, it's not. Don't feel sorry for me having to face them again. This to me is sort of like a day in the life on a trip to the planet of the orcs, or planet of the child raping pedophiles, the planet of insanity, and back again. We are in a war, and every single person on this planet is going to be caught up with the events unfolding now. And if people are not yet facing down the enemy today, they will regret it. Once they do realize what's going on, they will regret every single moment that they delayed in engaging the enemy. We all have to stand up, and we can actually resolve this entire conflict fairly peacefully, in a civilized way, fairly quickly, but we have to stand up, face down the truth, and understand what's going on. And it's going to catch up to all of us.
Thank you, Alfred.
So that's it.
I want every one of you listening around the world just to think about how you would feel if, where you lived, if you made a gesture with your arm, you could go to prison for 6 months. Okay, and think of how ridiculous that sounds. Think about gestures that, we all may have made in our life, you know, the two-finger gesture to someone, the flip the bird one-finger gesture. And this is another gesture that they're saying, oh, you have to go to prison for 6 months. And what's even more egregious is it allegedly took place in a prison anyway. So it's not, you know, I don't like to go down this line of saying, well, even that, because we shouldn't even be talking about this being any sort of offence anyway. But they can't say it's in a public place. It's in a prison. OK, and what sort of goes on in prison? The sort of violence and the gangs and the language and all these things that go on in prison, and suddenly someone can get 6 months for something like that that's alleged to have happened in a prison. It really does. It's probably the finest example of the term clown world that I have ever heard. Monica, have you got any comments that you'd like to make on what Alfred said?
Yeah, and just to add to what you said, Andy, about it, this gesture, it's not the type of gesture that is threatening to anybody. Like, for example, if somebody made a gesture where they're going to, you know, pull back their fist, so they're about to attack, then you could say, oh, well, the person on the other side felt threatened. No, this is an open palm gesture, which my understanding of the origins of it, the Roman salute, is that it basically shows I am unarmed, I come in peace and friendship. Is that not the case? I mean, this is a peaceful gesture with an open palm. You're not hiding anything. You're not pulling back a fist to about to attack. This is the opposite. Am I right about that? Like, that's my understanding of it.
Yes, I believe you're right, Monica. It's a completely peaceful, it's a symbol of unity, just like the swastika is a symbol of unity that's been around for thousands of years. It's a peaceful symbol. It's a symbol of harmony. And it has been so turned on its head. And the grotesqueness of the world that we are in right now, of how they have turned everything on their head, they have never, ever made it easier for people who didn't want to concern themselves with politics to actually come around and understand what's going on. And once people do, they feel an utter rage at the insulting nature of this. And I'm actually quite convinced that they are doing this now to make it ever so much easier for people to understand what's going on, in order to come to tell us afterwards, well, we tried to help you by making it so obviously, blatantly, obscenely grotesque kind of thing. Because they have, all of us have been profiled, okay? And they know how we will respond, much in the way that you know how your conditioned dog will respond, even if you're not there. If you have a guard dog, you do not have to be home, and he will still protect your home, because that's how he's been conditioned, and that's where his loyalties sit, you know, reside. He will do everything he can to protect you. And they know how I will respond to certain provocations. And that's why they did that during the corona time. They actually made it very easy for me to sabotage their thing. And for me, it's no big deal for me not to go out and get my fresh air for one day. And yet they canceled it then. Why did they pull that same incident up now, when they could have, in fact, pulled up a number of other incidences that they could easily throw me in jail now for 10 years, because I'm breaking all their conditions that they put on me for my time of parole. I served 4 years in prison because of my Roman salute. In other words, because I showed how high my dog can jump in that court. When Monica came into the courtroom, you know, I served my 4 years, and yet they made conditions for my release. And even there, I am breaking all of these conditions openly, actually, not too openly on the street, but they're tracking, they're monitoring all my phone calls. They're monitoring my Telegram channel and this and that and stuff. And yet they take this silly nothing and make a court case out of it. So that actually does give some credibility, will give them credibility to say, we did this because we wanted to provide you with an example for how obscenely grotesque this insanity is. And if the people are still too stupid, we're only trying to help you to provide examples for them so they can come around. Because there's just yesterday, after I came back from Augsburg in that court case, somebody sent me some stuff here about a guy. His name is Dr. Heinrich Feichtner or something like that. And he's a doctor, and he had been attacking them, the system, for after he analyzed what these COVID injections are, these so-called vaccines. And this guy they accuse suddenly, and he's on trial now too, and they're just, you know, concocting stuff against him, and they accused him of doing a Hitler salute, but this guy has an amputated right arm, so he physically can't even do it. So this is going, you know, this is going completely insane. I mean, how can a guy who doesn't even have a right arm? I don't know. I can send you the file after, or the video that I have here, because it is so, it's in German. You know, he's talking in German, and you know, he's not on our same wavelength on a number of other subjects, but he is completely involved in this Corona COVID, exposing this genocide of the human race, basically. I mean, the human species. You know, nobody's going to get away with in trying to actually inject the whole human race with some biological rat poison, like a bioweapon. That's what this is. That's what he's exposing. And then they try to lock him away for something that he can't even do. And yeah, try to tell me that. Explain to that to me. It's as nonsensical as the case that I was involved in yesterday.
Quickly,
some of these things are just so nonsensical. They are almost like they are purposefully making it as insane as they possibly can.
Gaslighting. Remember you were talking about gaslighting?
Yes.
Maybe this is gaslighting, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Sorry, Andy, I think you were going to say something. Go ahead.
No, it was just, I heard another story. I read it in the Daily Mail, I believe, yesterday. I do a show on Monday called The Limies with Malefica Scott, who was on with you with Giuseppe that first hour on the New Year's Day show that you both did, that I enjoyed listening to on Speak Free. It was on Republic Broadcasting Network, or republicbroadcasting.org. But he gathers together all the sort of COVID stories and things like that for a section he's got called The Great Distraction. So I left it because I know he'll pick it up. But there was some German doctor who's been jailed for 3 years for giving out exemptions, something like that, and they didn't like that at all, and they put her in jail for 3 years. Did you hear that story?
I did. Actually, one of the people who attended our trial in 2018, she just wrote to me, and she says she and her two of her children have been attending that trial. So I did hear about it just a few days ago. That sounds really interesting. So go ahead and continue with that. Thank you.
Unfortunately, I mean, I could look it up, certainly, but what I'll do is just to top and tail what Alfred said about the swastika, because I remember listening to Dr. James P. Wickstrom some years ago, and he did something about the scouts. One of the top awards they could get was the swastika, the top scouting badges. So what I did, and I like to go to the enemy's tools to see if something comes up in a search on their tools. So I went to google.com and I just typed in scout swastika, and the very top result, swastikas in scouting, I'm just going to click on it, and it's from a website called worldscoutingmuseum.org, and this is what it says. When one first sees a swastika and a scout symbol, often the first thing that comes to mind is the question, did scouting support the Nazi movement? The answer is no. The swastika symbols have an extensive history, and some have been used for at least 5,000 years. And then here's the main bit I wanted to read out. The origin of the swastika emblem in scouting. From What Scouts Can Do, More Yarns by Baden-Powell, 1921. As you know from the account of the swastika thanks badge, which I have given to you in Scouting for Boys, the symbol was used in almost every part of the world in ancient days, and therefore has various meanings given to it. Anyway, whatever the origin was, the swastika now stands for the badge of fellowship among scouts all over the world. And when anyone has done a kindness to a scout, it is their privilege to present him or her with this token of their gratitude, which makes him a sort of member of the Brotherhood and entitles him to the help of any other scout at any time and at any place. I want specially to remind scouts to keep their eyes open and never fail to spot anyone wearing this badge. It is their duty then to go up to such a person, make the scout sign, and ask if they can be of service to the wearer. And that's Robert Baden Powell. And I'll include that link in the post for the show today, folks, because there's some drawings of the swastika from different regions, etc., around the world, and different, I mean, there's one for with Christian underneath it, there's one with Hopi underneath it, there's a Hindu one, there's a Celt one, there's one from Bali, Greek. So yeah, I'll include that, and you might enjoy looking at that. So Monica, well, Alfred, any comments, and I'll see if I can find this Daily Mail article about this German doctor.
What we have to learn to do is to overcome the negative emotions that these symbols, the negative emotions that are triggered by the programming that are by the programming, the programs that we have been indoctrinated with. These symbols have been misappropriated to trigger these programs, namely the false, there's 6 million lampshades and so forth. These programs. We're supposed to believe that and fall to our knees when we see these symbols, and we have to completely and totally overcome these negative emotions and think about what these symbols, where they originate, what they truly do represent. But to overcome these emotions, you cannot just sort of erase them like you can erase a chalkboard, the writing on a chalkboard. These emotions are a lot like if you have conditioned your dog to, let's say, attack people who wear a uniform or something like that, and then you realize that was not such a good idea, so you try to deprogram your dog, you will find that it will not be an easy task. He will still always growl and snarl and so forth when he sees a uniform. And I know myself, I had to do some self-therapy to get rid of the negative emotions that I felt when I saw, for example, a short mustache like the Hitler mustache or a swastika or anything, the word Nazi or so forth. I was myself fairly successfully programmed or indoctrinated or brainwashed by this lifelong, Hollywood narrative kind of thing, and had to work hard and intensely for a fairly long period of time to really truly overcome that. It's not easy. Like, it takes a long time to overcome that. And that's what we all have to do. Now, the young people can overcome it faster because they haven't, been suffered for many years simply because they are younger. But for older people, especially like the people 50 years or, 55 and so forth, they have had nothing but this indoctrination. And for them, it's the most difficult. But there's no way around it. We've got to deal with it. Just like you would deal with somebody who's addicted to opium or something. Like a heroin addict or something, or try to overcome cigarette smoking, like nicotine. It's almost like an addiction to overcome this lifelong indoctrination that has us so warped, So that's it.
Thank you, Alfred. And Monica, I've got the article now. If you want me to read it, or if you want to make any comment beforehand, then please do.
I just want to say I concur 100% with this notion of the conditioning that we've had, and it really is it's like a conditioning that you don't have full control over. It it's not intellectual so much as it is the whole body responds to these programs that were installed, like Alfred said. So even after learning about true history, about Germany, about World War II, I also suffered from those reactions that I would have if, for example, I saw an article that put Adolf Hitler into a good light, even though I had learned that, okay, he's not the most evil man that walked the face of this earth like they have programmed into us all our lives. I still flinched. I still drew my breath. I still thought, oh, don't put that article there, to a friend of mine who had a really great website. I thought, you're going to, harm your own website. And I just, it took a while. Like Alfred says, it's like these conditioned responses. Like, I mean, Pavlov's dog, this psychologist Pavlov or whatever his title was. But yeah, I could just say I concur to that.
Thank you, Monica. And we're just over halfway through the show. We can overrun, but I'm going to do this article and then get on to your new book, which I'm very interested in. I know that the audience will be also. This is a short piece. It was published. We're recording this, folks, on January the 4th, the Wednesday. We're going out on the Friday. And so Alfred's, you know, Inquisition was on the Tuesday the 3rd. This article was also published on Tuesday the 3rd of January, Daily Mail. I'll give you the headline and then I'll read it, which will repeat some of the headline, but just so you can find it. Well, actually, no, I'll include this link as well. Let's get this lined up. So there'll be a few links in this show for you to look at if you're so inclined. A German doctor has been sentenced to 2 years and 9 months in prison for illegally issuing more than 4,000 people with exemptions from wearing masks during the coronavirus pandemic. Public broadcaster SWR reported that a regional court in the southwestern town of Weinheim convicted the doctor for issuing certificates to people from across Germany, most of whom she had never met or examined. During the trial, she had argued that wearing masks was harmful to people's health. She was also handed a 3-year work ban and ordered to pay 20,000 euros, the sum she had received for issuing the medical certificates. Her office assistant was fined 2,700 euros. The doctor's lawyer intends to appeal against the verdict, SWR reported. Dozens of supporters gathered outside the court in Weinheim, north of Heidelberg, to protest against the verdict and Germany's pandemic restrictions. One held a sign that read in German, "Human dignity has been violated. When will you rise?" Germany ended requirements to wear masks in many indoor settings last year, though they are still compulsory on long-distance trains, in doctors' practices, hospitals, nursing homes, and on some regional public transport. In April 2020, the wearing of masks on public transport was made compulsory in Berlin and other cities. Now, nearly 3 years on, Germans are still required to wear masks on long... Well, they've just said that. They're repeating themselves. Masks and a negative test are mandatory to enter hospitals and nursing homes. It comes after health chiefs in the UK warned this week that unwell adults should stay at home and wear a mask if they have to go outside. So they're veering off. So the main part of this story is a German doctor has been given 2 years and 9 months in prison for illegally issuing more than 4,000 people with exemptions from wearing masks during the coronavirus pandemic. Nice to see that there are a lot of people protesting that outside. Monica, your comments, then please go over to Alfred for his.
Yes, this friend of ours that attended there, she was one of those people who could not get into the courtroom because they only allowed a very small number into the courtroom and the rest were outside. And she said that they were patrolled or, you know, there were a huge number of police officers there to control the masses. And I mean, it's just unbelievable that this takes place. And then all these protesters who are really looking after our good health and defending this doctor who is doing the right thing, but it just turns everything on its head. You know, oh, these are going to be, you know, are they violent criminals outside? No, these are people who are just defending our right to breathe and defending a doctor who has insisted on our right to breathe and going against this very damaging order to wear a mask where you stifles your breath, you can't breathe, and turns you into subservient slave. You know, like Alfred said earlier, it's a symbol of subservient slave. I find it very interesting that in hospitals, these are the places where you still must wear a mask. Unbelievable, is it not? Hospitals, like this is supposedly where they're going to try to cure you and make you healthy. Well, this tells you exactly what hospitals are about, and we had best steer clear of those institutions. So, yeah, that's my comments on that.
Alfred, I said that this would be, you were straight out of the traps there, but you actually, funnily enough, were talking about the problems you had with wearing masks in prison and your refusal to do so. So we've got some interesting overlap there with this story I didn't believe that would come up. Sorry to jump in, Alfred. Please go ahead.
No, that's fine. Yeah, thank you, Monica. Also, for you to mention, well, people are going to learn to steer clear of the hospitals. You know, Monica, I've had heard from a number of people who have had, for example, a sick child or something, and even the head doctors in these hospitals are starting to warn them, get your child out of this hospital as fast as possible. The hospitals have become death zones for us. When our oppressors are defining what is legal, it is now legal to inject all of the people with a bioweapon that will kill them. That is defined as legal. And for someone to want to breathe our God-given air with our God-given right to breathe that air, that is illegal. Then we have a problem with the blots of toner on paper, as I call them, the lawmakers, the people of the book, you know, the eternal poisoners of the wells seem to have overstepped all natural, humanitarian or natural laws. I mean, we have reached a point where, let's put it this way, if you were an alien from some other planetary system, and you came down and observed what was going on with us right now, you would say the human race has got to overcome this problem. It's a temporary problem because this will kill them. But this thing will actually elicit the biological response that Eustace Mullins talked about even before the false flag event of 9/11. And this is exactly what this will do. And that's why I will not compromise at all with this nonsensical trial that I'm faced with now. And neither will any of these people. I mean, everybody who has once really understood the gravity of this hypocrisy, this criminal, insane, lethal hypocrisy, there's no going back. You do not compromise with breathing. For example, if you're swimming in a lake or something, you're not going to go down and pretend you're a fish and can stay underwater for longer than until you need to breathe again. We are in a life and death struggle. There is no compromising. If they say it is illegal to breathe, but it is legal to inject your children with a bioweapon, we have a problem with the laws. And not a problem with disobedience or something. It is our holy and moral obligation to disobey these laws. That's as clear as that. If I tell you to go to the bottom of that swimming pool and stay there for 10 minutes, because here I have a law here on this piece of paper, it says that you're going to have to do that, you should not do it. You should punch me in the face and, you know, kick me or something, but do not obey my nonsensical laws that are going to lead to your death. That's where we are right now. And the sooner, or put it this way, the later that people actually figure this out, the more desperate they will be to try to prove that they are worthwhile to be called a human being with a brain, you know, with a functioning brain and maybe a fist that can be implemented to protect our rights. I mean, this is a life and death struggle that we are all involved in right now. And nobody has a single moment to waste in getting involved in this. Like, just be a human being, face up to the facts, use your common sense. You have a God-given brain, well, use it, you know. Okay, that's it, before I get too excited.
Thank you, Alfred. And, I mean, I can share something on that topic, because I lost one of the... It's called a T-tube. It's like a grommet, but it's more permanent. It basically makes you hear better because it creates a perforation in your ear, so the sound can get through easier, you know. But I'm so nervous now of going into hospitals and having surgery and waking up, or maybe not even waking up, or finding out I've been vaxxed while I've been in there against my will, because they know who all the dissidents are. And if you put yourself under their anaesthetic, there's no telling what will happen to you. And I have someone I only ever met once. Many of you will recognise the name. He was the banking expert on Daryl Bradford Smith's The French Connection show, IamTheWitness.com, many years ago. Of course, I played some of Daryl's shows over the Christmas period, his early ones. This guy was called Mohammed Rafiq, and he was an extremely bright individual. He had a tremendous knowledge of the banking system, and also how the banking system could be essentially he had replacement ideas for it. He was very senior in an organization that was pushing that. He went into hospital just, I think it was just before the pandemic or just near the start of it, and he had some little problem, and it was something like an ingrown toenail or something to do with his foot, and he supposedly had an operation, and allegedly it was bandaged up wrongly, but the upshot was a few days later he died of sepsis in the same hospital. And I, because of what's been done to us, I, the likes of the three of us that are on the front line here, if we put ourselves in the medical establishment, I don't think that they would pass up the opportunity to get rid of us. And, you know, when you look at, as I do, the figures every week, and they're only announcing them every month now on the UK government website, the amount of people who've died or been injured after taking the vaccines. And these are only the people that have reported it, folks, officially, to the government. And we know that that's a very small percentage of people who actually bother to fill in the forms, which aren't easy to do. We've had nearly 500,000 people reporting being injured after taking the vaccine, and over 2,200 being killed after taking the vaccine. And this is off a UK government website. This isn't, you know, off some conspiracy channel. Yet the mainstream media don't want to talk about that. And it just goes to show then that you've got obviously some cooperation between the media, the pharmaceutical companies, and the government in blocking the information that could put people off taking these vaccines. So it appears to me, with that information, that there's clearly an agenda to use harmful pharmaceuticals against their own people. But that being said, Monica, are you ready for me to get onto the topic for your book, or would you like to jump in with anything beforehand?
No, you go ahead. Thank you.
Okay.
Can I say one? I'd like to jump in with one thing. Just remember General George Patton, okay? When he had figured out what was going on, he had a minor car accident and he did not come out of the hospital alive. They murdered him there. I can honestly say, Andy, that your worries, your concerns are valid. I would not go into that hospital unless you had somebody who you really do trust, who has a complete overview of what's going on, or put it off, you know, whatever, you know, your ailment there, you know, the treatment for that ailment, because you are definitely in the crosshairs of these people. I'm not trying to say that to scare you. I'm just trying to tell you that because that's the way it is. That's the track record that we're looking at. Think of General George Patton. They will stop at nothing to get mm-hmm. who they want to take down. And in the hospitals, yeah. That's where they've got their people in very high concentration, just like in the legal system, you know, the just us system, you know. I would not go in there if I didn't have to. That's my take on that. Now, yeah. You can go in there, maybe you're lucky, but that's, you know, that's a chance you're taking.
Taking somebody who's advocating for you and going to be there to protect you if you are having to go under for any reason, that's very, very good good advice. That you want somebody that's looking out for your interests that you can trust.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, like Alfred says, oh, died of complications, that becomes all too easy to say, right?
And in a hospital, and also in a hospital, they can, even if you have trusting people who are treating you, somebody else could sabotage maybe something that you will be injected with or something like that. Like the persons who are actually treating you might not even realize that the tools they are using have been sabotaged that with poisoned or whatever. Like there are so many opportunities for them to get at you. And the place is, every hospital is swarming with our enemies because they have all been profiting from this, injecting our people with this lethal bioweapon. So they're already guilty of mass murder. And then you are exposing their mass murder. Now think of it that way. Now I would do anything I could to not go there. Like, you know, you have to understand, you are the detective who is threatening their cushy, profitable lives of mass murder. You know, that's, you have to, I'm just saying it the way it is.
No, you're both absolutely correct. I think the only thing that I would add, I had a supporter of the show, I believe, they had to go to hospital. It was something to do with a child of theirs that was somehow, the details are sketchy. I've got a very bad memory with things like this. Essentially, in order to get in there, they had to take a COVID test, and they didn't want to. But it was that sort of situation that it was more important that they go in there and go through what they didn't want to go through to get in there, if that makes any sense. You know, you have to weigh up. I think they're called the opportunity costs. You have to weigh it up and think, well, both of them aren't nice, you know, not being there for my child or you know, and having this test and what have you. There's going to come a time if you get hit by a bus or something like that, and I mean, you might wake up in the hospital, you've had no choice, but there could be a fall you have or something. I'm not trying to, you know, it's getting all negative now, but if you break something, Dr. Lorraine Day will tell you herself that her only faith in medicine has been to repair things like broken bones, stuff like that. She wouldn't use the medical industry for cancer or anything like that. It's just for putting people back together again, which is what she did
exactly.
As an orthopaedic surgeon. And yeah, so these sort of things, they can happen. I've been thinking about it as Alfred and Monica were speaking. If you're conscious and they're setting your leg or something, say you've broken a leg, they want to inject you, you could say, well, is it going to be painful? Well, you might be all right. Well, then avoid the injection altogether if it's not going to be that painful. If they are going to inject you, what is in the injection? Can you tell me what it is? All these sort of things. And as Monica said, if you get someone to go with you to advocate for you, then they can be checking everything off. But then also, as Alfred says, I mean, you see it in, it's something that they commonly use in their Hollywood film industry, where someone will tamper with a drip of someone in a hospital. It's very easy to do. So it doesn't even have to be one of the medical personnel. Once you're in there, anyone could get in and out of a hospital fairly easily undetected. And when you're sort of lying there passed out with something in your arm, they can easily add to it. So it's going to be one of these things that you have to weigh up in your own mind. And probably the best example for me is the late great Dr. Adrian Krieg, my dear friend, who went into the VA hospital, and he was told he had this cancer and what have you. And I don't regret it, because he was aware of alternative therapies. He was a very bright man. You know that, those of you who listen to him. But it was his illness and it was his decision. Of course, we know it went badly. He had an operation. He never recovered. He passed away. We don't know if he'd have gone down a different route, if he would still be with us, but he made that decision. So give information to people, but never put yourself in the position where you can be, sometimes consider yourself liable for the decision they make. I've always said, you know, I have a girlfriend, I'm completely against vaccines. She's taken all the vaccines and the booster, as have her parents. I've said I don't agree with vaccines, but I don't speak to her every day throwing all this information. I've told her once, she knows the situation, but it's an upbringing thing with them. They you know, believe everything in the Daily Mail, and, you know, they have these things, and I don't. But that's their decision. Obviously, if it turns out badly, then you have to be there to support them. But things like the shedding aspect that I hear of, obviously that concerns me when she's grabbing my hand when we're out and things like that. But that's a situation I'm sure many of you listening go through as well. You can't, you know, isolate yourself from your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. Husband or wife, you are where you are, and people make decisions. I think that's why in the Bible it says in the end times, you know, all these different family members will turn against each other. And I've never seen anything quite like that than the problems caused in families amongst people who would wear masks, wouldn't wear masks, would lock down, wouldn't lock down, would take a jab, wouldn't take a jab. It's literally broken families apart. So anyway, that being said, that was a bit of a long-winded one there. So, Monica, anything you'd like to say about that? And then Alfred, and then we must get into your book and run over for a little bit, because I want to cover that.
No, that was all really, really good, what you were just saying, Andy. You know, this has been splitting families apart, and, you know, we've experienced it in our own family. And as far as mixing and mingling with the people who have made the other decision and have allowed themselves to be jabbed. Yeah, I mean, I know that it's through our trusting nature that we have been taken down this road, and this trusting nature of ours has been turned into a weapon against us. So that is how it is. But I also don't stop associating and mingling with people. I mean, some of my musician friends that I continue to play music with, I hug them at the door, welcome them into my home, and we carry on, you know. So this is how it is, and I don't worry about the you know, the things like shedding and whatnot. I just don't worry about it. I don't interrogate people before I hug them, you know, have you been jabbed? I just go ahead. And so anyway, that's how it is. But everything you said was great. So, okay, we'll turn it over to the next subject. Go ahead, Andy.
I wanted to say something just briefly. My summary for this entire Corona COVID thing now in 2023, we are now January 2023, is I trust a doctor or who wears a mask because of the so-called Corona, or a doctor who will inject because of the so-called Corona. I trust him as much as I would trust a doctor who has his finger stuck up his ass, and I ask him why he's got it there. He says, for the hygiene. That's as much as I trust him. So that's it. Then you can take it from there. Like, that's why I would not go into a hospital that requires a COVID test any more than I would trust the hospital where they're all walking around with their fingers stuck up their ass. Sorry to be sound so crude, but these are only words describing a crude situation, a crude reality.
Yes, I agree. And I mean, this is where I'm, you know, it's important. Language is important. And the way that Alfred expressed that, if people find that offensive, what do you consider more offensive? The fact that your medical system is openly trying to kill you. And that's not a stretch, because if I can get these figures that are medical figures, then the medical people should be aware of them all. And they're still blatantly jabbing people. If I was a nurse or a doctor and I saw these figures, I would refuse to have anything to be involved in any way with putting, you know, jabbing people with these so-called vaccines that we know aren't vaccines. You know, I thought they had something like the Hippocratic Oath and they do no harm. Well, they know that these have done harm, and so how they can continue using them is beyond me. So anyway, let's go over to, now this is the barnesreview.org. Monica has got a book out. It's called Sorry Mum, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust. I'm going to read you what it says on the Barnes Review website, and the link will be in the post for this show. So folks, this is a book that you can get hold of, a hard copy. I recommend it. It says, a description, The Trials and Tribulations of the Schaefer Siblings by Monica Schaefer. In the early 1950s, Otto Schaefer and Edith Smilinski emigrated from Germany to Canada. They met, fell in love, married, and soon had children. I am one of those children. My mother and father were proud of their heritage, though they were told again and again that they should not be. Germans were brutes, warmongers, and responsible for the Holocaust. We children were also taught this in school. It was reiterated in every movie or TV program we saw. I wholeheartedly believe that our people were responsible for the greatest crimes in history. I said to my mother, why didn't you, your friends, your folk, your family, why didn't you do something to stop these bad things from happening? Stop Hitler and stop these death camps. You should have done something. You must have known. My mother told me she didn't know. She added that nobody knew. They only learnt about it afterwards. By the time I understood the nature of the post-war re-education programme, my parents had passed away. I wrote a cathartic posthumous letter and made a short video entitled Sorry Mum, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust, as my research had definitively proven to my satisfaction the real story about World War II, Adolf Hitler, and the events we now know as the Holocaust did not match what we were taught in school. That video went viral and triggered a surreal odyssey that ended up with my brother Alfred and I spending years in German prisons for our thoughts and words. This book recounts that saga. Soft cover, 304 pages, and it's $25. Monica, what can you tell us about this book?
Yeah, it is about my awakening journey, sort of my political activism along the way, a little bit of background about my parents, some of their war stories, and then the odyssey of what happened after putting that video out in 2016. And it's just a 6-minute video. It's very, very short, but it did trigger a firestorm. And I knew when I did that, and when Alfred and I, like Alfred was the producer of it, I was visiting him in Germany when I did that video using his fine equipment. And I knew that I was going through a door, a one-way door, never to return to the other side, because I knew this was a very taboo subject. That I knew, but I could not have imagined the details. So, but I have no regrets, never did. I never for one moment in the years following that had a single moment of regret, because as you say in your introduction to your show, Andy, the truth will set you free. And that is absolutely apt. It is the truth. The truth will set you free. I have felt free as a bird, including my 10 months in jail. So when it says there are years of jail, that is the combined between Alfred and myself, Alfred having spent 4 years and me having spent 10 months in a prison cell. And so, yeah, there were a lot of interesting stories along the way, and I tried to recount some of that in the book. I hope that people find it interesting. My other great desire, Andy, is that people who are willing and inclined to read it, that even if they don't yet understand the full scope of how much we have been lied to, not only in our current this crisis we are in right now that we have talked about a lot on this show so far, you know, the jabbing us and actually killing us with this bioweapon, but this is all connected to what has happened in our history and the lies they have been able to tell us about our history. So it's all connected. So my hope is that people will be drawn into this, and that they will be able to see and understand what this is about. And that is my hope, that I can reach some of the folks who have not yet opened their eyes to our history and those lies, because these are programs that really have been installed, hardwired, you could say. I mean, I felt like this narrative of World War II was hardwired into my bloodstream. That's why I was so traumatized when I was learning about those things. And that's why I was taking my parents to task for not stopping these things from happening. I mean, you know, it's rather naive to say to your mom, why didn't you stop these things from happening? She was only a teenager during the war, you know. But still, this was a trauma. And yeah, that's my hope, is that this book reaches people who are just starting to open their eyes, or people who perhaps, you know, maybe somebody shares the book with somebody who really hasn't opened their eyes yet at all. And maybe this will just open their eyes just a little crack. That's my desire. I'm just an ordinary person, normal person. I'm not somebody who has, has been a historian for years and years and studied in academia, all these things. No, I'm an ordinary person who did take a look and discovered that we're being lied to on a massive scale, and then had all these experiences, and then I wrote about it. And that's it. That's it in a nutshell. So back to you.
Thank you, Monica. Yes, and certainly myself, I wasn't a trained writer either. I found out all these different things and kept them in a timeline form, so that when I did the research, I didn't lose it somewhere, and it just got bigger and bigger and ended up becoming, you know, the synagogue of Satan. So when one puts one's mind to a topic that they're really interested in, then, you know, the possibilities are endless. And sometimes somebody who hasn't come from, say, a trained writing background can put out something that's as appealing, if not more appealing, than someone who has come from that background. And of course, with Monica's book, you've got the additional, the main factor that this is an autobiography as well. It's kind of the autobiography of her awakening. And who better to write about the time in prison than the person who experienced it? And with regard to Alfred, if many of you remember, I used to, look out for, I know Monica used to put letters up on a website, that when she'd get a letter from Alfred, she put it up there, and I know other people did as well. And so she's got a lot of information from Alfred's period in prison, from the very letters that he wrote to her. So the whole book as a package, I think you will find very interesting, because you're looking at a story of how somebody who, Monica was a very left-leaning liberal, I believe, and I'll go back to her for her thoughts most of her life. She woke up to this information and was absolutely shocked, and she looked into it. And imagine somebody with that background, they're going to want to look into it and say, well, this is wrong, because I want it to be wrong, because if it's not wrong, then I've been living a lie all these years, and I don't think that I'm stupid, you know, and why would I have believed all this stuff? And now suddenly I find out something different. So Monica really went into this had a tremendous experience, tremendous awakening. And then, of course, on top of that, you've got the experiences of life in prison and Alfred's as well. So that being said, Monica, is there anything there you'd like to clarify? And then we'll go over to Alfred to close out the show.
Sure. I was very involved in the Green Party. You know, I just felt that my love and desire to protect nature and you know, my love of life and love of everything good, really, I thought that was the place for me, the Green Party. And then that's written about in the book too, the odyssey of discovery that, oh, the Green Party? I don't know. I now call them the Watermelon Party. Yes. I think maybe you can figure out why. But yeah, so I was mistaken about that too. And so it's a very interesting part of my life, I would say. And just one more thing I would say about it. Okay, while it is rather of an autobiographical nature, it is not about the self. It is about the bigger picture. That was the purpose of writing it. It's not to say to the world, look, this is about me. No, it's about the bigger picture. This is all in this struggle we find ourselves in. I would like to make a contribution to try to help us on our side in this struggle for truth and life. That is essentially what this is about. So I'll leave it at that and hand it over to Alfred. And then, you know, we can close out the hour that you have for your show and not go too much over. Thanks, Andy, for having us on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Monica. You know, when Monica was stressing how the truth will set you free, she was not exaggerating one tiny bit, not a bit. It really does set you free. And because all the discomforts you feel are no different than some mountaineer, let's say, who wants to scale all the highest peaks on this planet, they will go through incredible suffering just for the view and the satisfaction of being on top of that mountain. And that's what you have to see. Anything they do to us is just the, let's say, the storms and the cold and the whatever it is. But at the end, when you see the truth, you will be so happy that you contributed something to being able to see that truth. That's what this is all about. So don't waste any time. If you haven't done anything yet, you can start now with the next time you see somebody wearing a mask or asking you if you've been vaccinated. That's your starting point. Just engage anybody who has not yet figured it out, and you will see. Then you will really be free of this matrix of lies. That's all I can say.
Thank you so much, Alfred, and thank you so much, Monica. And we'll be having a chat after the show to see if we can find a date for next month for both Alfred and Monica to return. So, folks, I want to thank Alfred and Monica for joining us on today's show entitled Alfred's New Inquisition and Monica's New Book. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'll be back with you all tomorrow. And until then, have a wonderful day, and bye for now.